All right, should we start?
Sure.
You should.
Let's
you
start.
Y'all ready for this?
Y'all ready for this?
Hanty here with another episode.
I'm Brendan Drischler, also here with another episode.
I'm Chris Revell, Those Stories and Meg Coyne tonight on 60 Minutes. Meg Coyne's here, everybody.
Hello, I'm Meg Coyne. I'm the guest from the West.
She's the guest from the West. She is our very dear friend, and we are so pleased she joined us tonight for this special podcast recording.
Yeah, so as I recall, we told you that we had a podcast and that we were doing Jack the Giant Slayer. And you stopped talking on GChat, and 8 hours later, you showed up on our
bags of yes. I'm ready!
I flew out here especially for this.
That's right.
Just got on the plane.
She was at the airport.
Yep.
So yes, as been stated, this is the Jack the Giant Slayer episode. Just to remind everyone, our drink was the Mead Phi Fo Fum, which was one of the first drinks that I've actually drank all of and enjoyed, as far as my memory can stretch to. Just in case you missed it, it was we just had 3 ounces mead, 1.5 ounces gin, 6 ounces ginger beer, a half ounce of lime juice, 1/4 cup blueberries, and we did a lovely mint garnish to emulate the titular beanstalk. Actually, it's not in the title.
There'd be some nice visual business going on. With the blueberries looking like magic beans and the mint sprig looking like a beanstalk coming out on top.
And it was...
I prefer my business to always be visual.
That's right.
And it was delicious.
It was
so good.
It still is delicious. I'm still consuming it.
Yeah. Roughly 4 hours after we first poured the drink.
It can still be delicious, ladies and gentlemen.
It can.
If you make it.
Even after it's separated and you have to stir it back to consistency with a wilted mint sprig.
It's wilted and going up your nose.
Snap judgment. Was the drink better than the movie?
Yes.
Apples and oranges.
Yes.
Yes. It's Thai.
Well, before we get too into tearing this movie down and breaking it down and building it back up again.
Cutting down the beanstalk.
Let's hear about what this movie was actually about from someone who cares to tell it.
Hi, everyone. I care. So, Jack the Giant Slayer, 2013, directed by Bryan Singer. We open intercutting between two separate scenes of Jack and his dad hearing a story about giants with Princess Isabel and her mom hearing the same story. And they hear about a long time ago, a bunch of monks wanted to find God, so they created a magic bean. And they planted the bean, and a beanstalk grew, and they went up to the sky, and they found giants. And those giants got into a fight with them, and eventually they found a way to control the giants by ripping out one of the dead giant's heart and melting it down into a crown. And the king would wear the crown, and with that crown he could control the giants. So this is a long time ago. People seem to think this was a myth or something, but I don't know. Anywho, Jack is much older and attractive, played by Nicholas Holt, and he has to take his horse and cart to the cloister, right? That's the name of the castle, the cloister, in Albion, which is where they live, and he's going to sell it because their uncle wants them to. Meanwhile, Princess... What's
Isabel.
Her name? Isabel, thank you, is having a larf out among the local people, you know, as princesses do, running away. They have a little meet-cute. She gets rescued by Ewan McGregor, who is the guardian?
There's no title assigned to him, but he is a guardian.
Yeah.
He seems to be the head guardian.
Also, can we also just say foxiest guardian?
Yeah. Well deserved. If you win it by being attractive, then no brainer.
No contest.
We also find out that Princess Isabel is engaged to Roderick, played by the wonderful Stanley Tucci. Always wonderful. And he's kind of a slimy fellow, and you start to suspect that maybe he's a little greedy because he managed to find the crown and leftover magic beans. And he wants to use them for his own nefarious purposes, apparently. Unfortunately, a monk steals them, gives them to Jack, who smuggles them out of the kingdom. Later that night, one of them starts to grow under his house. Meanwhile, Princess Isabel is running away so that she can spend some time slumming it in the kingdom with her subjects. She gets caught in a storm, and she finds Jack's house, and they have another little cute scene. But meanwhile, the beanstalk is growing up from underneath them. It takes the house up with Princess Isabel in it. Jack falls on the ground, and the king allows Jack and Ewan McGregor and
Elmont.
Thank you.
Elmont.
Yeah.
I remember all the head chingles.
Yeah. Amon's best friend, Craw.
Bald.
Yes. Bald. Another guardian.
Classic character.
Classic baldy. and the Tooch and his little Weasley lackey to climb the beanstalk and get Isabel back. When they get up there, they get separated. They find out that there are giants up there. Wow.
Go figure.
Elmont gets captured. So does Craw, who then gets eaten very quickly right afterward. Jack has to go sort of find them. Meanwhile, Tooch kills off Bald. His little lackey gets eaten. But then the Tooch reveals that he had smuggled the magic crown up with him. And he puts on the crown and all the giants are at his command. Meanwhile, back at the giant's palace or something, we meet Fallon, who is the leader of the giants, who has two heads. One regular-sized head where your head might be, dear listener. And another smaller, fetus-like head on the side. It's a weird little combination because the fetus head doesn't really talk. It just makes gurgling noises and occasionally repeats things vaguely. But Fallon seems like an okay guy, voiced by Bill Nighy, motion captured by Bill Nighy. Elmont tries to stop Roderick from taking the giants back down to Albion and taking over the world. He manages to kill Roderick, but unfortunately, Fallon grabs the magic crown from Roderick's body and he decides to be in control of the giants. Jack and Isabel have gone down the beanstalk and are heading back to the castle when the giants show up and there's a huge big battle at the end. They reenact the Minas Tirith scene from Return of the King. And boy, I'm trying to think what else really might have happened here.
Okay, so, Fallon falls into the moat.
Right.
But then climbs underneath the castle. Bursts up through the floor of the throne room.
Right.
Is about to eat the princess.
About to eat Jack.
Yeah.
Because he has Jack over his mouth.
He's got both of them. Yeah. He's
double fisting humans.
I was gonna say.
Jack.
That's why I was refraining.
Jack has the last magic bean in his hand that he avoided giving to Roderick earlier when Roderick stole them from him, which he did, by the way, throws it down Big Fallon's mouth, and an enormous beanstalk erupts from Big Fallon, and it crushes little Fallon's little head, and his eyeball pops out at the camera. It's a 3D money shot, and the kids are hilarious. They love it.
Yay, PG.
And then, 13.
13.
Then we find out later on that after Jack and Eleanor have gotten...
Isabel.
That's her real name, right?
Yeah. Eleanor's the actress.
Yeah, okay. Jack and Isabel have gotten married. We find out that years later, the magic giant crown was melted down into the crown jewels of England. And the last scene that we see is in modern day with, like, a group of school children touring and seeing the crown and, like, all the other jewels. And we find out that, like, one of the kid there is a little reincarnated baby Stanley Tucci named Roddy. And then the teacher's just like, come on, Roddy, let's leave. And he sort of stares at the magic crown with a little mischievous glint in his eye. And you think to yourself, why? Anyhow, that's Jack the Giant Slayer, guys.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
Thanks for that concise summary.
That really was...
In a bean shell.
That's what people come to us for, is these... Right.
Concision.
Yeah. How long is it?
2 hours.
2 hours.
About 2 hours.
114 minutes.
At what point...
Someone read the back of the DVD.
Ooh, I'm sorry. So it's like 210. I'm so sorry.
At what point in our, like, Marvel-saturated lives is 2 hours no longer a long movie?
Well, I mean, it was funny, actually, when I was reading the back. I was like, oh, it's kind of short. And it's, yeah. like... It's not this, like, huge two-hour and a half.
2 hours to me doesn't seem that long. It would seem long if it was a rom-com, but, like, other than that, I... Don't mind 2 hours.
Well, it's all about pacing and what makes up the story.
Yeah. As a whole, it didn't feel long. I wasn't like...
No, it didn't really.
Not towards... It paces pretty well, out. And then once you get towards the final sequence,
yeah.
I thought the sequence was just terrible, and I don't want any of it.
No, it's horrible. But I will say, it is to this movie's credit, it's probably the least... boring or sodden that we've watched so far.
Probably the least bad movie I think we've seen
so far. Yeah. I would agree.
It's not a complete failure on all accounts, but it's also not good.
Yeah, I will also say it had the most obviously salvageable and good ideas at play.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't bring them to their full potential, I think.
It's
ultimately this movie's failing.
It's a much better realization of a pre-existing story than, like, Hook was, I think.
I think it's a pretty solid adaptation of...
Or Lone Ranger.
It's a framework that they stuck with and then, like, made up a story.
Because there were, like, many Lone Ranger stories. Yeah. Because there was, like, an episodic thing.
Right.
Yeah, but, like, Hook is based off of a consistent Peter Pan story.
That's true.
And this is based off of...
Jack the Beanstalk
and Jack the Giant Killer, the two fairy tales.
I want to talk about this first. Is it really weird that this is really England, apparently?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's apparently England.
Oh, my God.
It's Albion, but... the castle they live in is called the Cloister, which is not... if I go to the heritage castle list in the UK, the Cloister will not be there, and nor will it tell me that the King of England...
Because the beanstalk took it out. Tadoli!
Yeah.
That's why, guys. Yeah, it is... on the one hand, I sort of appreciated how it tried to get toward a more kind of historical setting.
I didn't.
No, I mean, I liked that on paper. It was not executed very well, and I think it really led to more confusion, because we were like, like, it's just so much shit that they didn't...
Half-assed made-up things.
Yeah.
Like Guardians and the Cloister.
Mm-hmm. Which is confusing when you involve monks in it, because generally if you think of a cloister, like, that's
the yeah,
right.
Because there are monks.
Right.
So that monks have an abbey, and then they refer to cloister, which right. for, like, the first half of the movie, I'm like, why are you talking about the abbey? And then, like, no, actually, it's the city, and it's like,
well, the cloister is the city and the castle. That appeals
well,
to house
like,
the royal family of England.
I assume it's like again, like how Minas Tirith is the city, but it's also like the castle is like.
Okay,
what does the monk
but
say?
But it's just like a general word for like monks is cloister.
Yeah.
It's weird that they would name
when
the
monk
that.
Is like selling to right. trying to shove the beams off on Nicholas Holt. Does he say? Does he say take him to the
take
abbey?
Them
take
to
him
the
to
abbey.
The abbey.
Okay,
so there's an abbey somewhere,
and then there's cloister.
That's not in yeah. the cloister,
right?
Which is
right. apparently
even though it is. So right. there's a lot of.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Little
so,
word confusion there.
It's just so lazy.
You're right. The monk also makes some questionable decisions in terms of
the monk
what
makes
he's
terrible
doing.
Decisions.
Yeah.
What? All right.
So to set this up, towards the beginning of the movie, and really what kind of kicks off the main plot is Jack finds himself within Cloister trying to sell a horse, and a monk who has stolen these beans tries to shove him off on him. But the way he goes about it is the most, like, roundabout, attention-grabbing way.
They're looking for a monk who stole the beans.
Right. Tooch has his men looking for a monk.
Yeah, so this monk is like, I gotta not have these beans on me because they're gonna search every single monk they find. Let me buy that horse,
I have no money.
But I have no money,
right.
But take
so
these beans.
Take these beans to the abbey,
but
and they'll
I'm
pay
gonna,
you.
Yeah, but then I'm gonna ride the horse.
Yeah, and so, like, that's what I... So, like, he wants to make a very obvious escape on horseback. Instead of just handing the beans to Jack and being like, hey, great idea,
yeah.
Take these to the abbey. They'll pay you lots of money if you just take these to the abbey. I'm gonna hang out here and keep quiet for a week or so.
Yeah, don't
right.
try to pawn a horse off
yeah.
for some fucking beans that you're not gonna explain.
Exactly.
He's like, he does say, like, oh, these are priceless beans, and it's like, yeah, right, mate, like...
Worst wig, like, hairpiece of the movie was on that monk. It was, like, super obvious. Bald cap, the whole deal.
You're the sole wig watch.
Yeah, you're the
patrol.
Wig watch. Chris Revell on wig watch.
I never pay attention to wigs.
I can't tell.
Me neither.
I'm bad at it.
I'm really bad at it.
I mean, that's
I
why...
I just don't care.
You're all we have.
That's why I was so touched when Brendan was not the only person to think of me when Julia Roberts' terrible wig from Mother's Day made its debut.
We all thought of you in our hearts.
I am so glad.
We have to reconcile the epilogue of This is the Chronicles of England.
Yes.
With the prologue, which there's some other older guy who apparently ruled giants with
yeah.
magic.
Yeah, Eric. Eric the Great or Eric
terrible.
The Terrible.
Depending on who you ask.
Yeah, depending on who tells your story.
Yeah, depending on if you're a giant or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, your entire race was enslaved.
Which, by the way, I like that as a detail. I like that to the humans he's Eric the Great, but to the giants he is this kind of scourge. But
yes.
it doesn't... That's not really bared out to its fullest.
I like
fullest,
it, but,
yeah,
it tag teams into the next big issue I have, which is that there's... Giants are not explained very well. There's so much is introduced with these giants that's not gone into. There is... some sort of dissent within the group of giants.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of giants.
There's a general. There's
yeah.
like 100 or so.
Yeah.
And that giant named Thum, he sure is a trouble starter.
Yeah, he's like some sort of like, I don't know who he is.
He has, he seems to resent Fallon
he
for
seems
being
to resent,
in charge.
And he says like, you're not our king.
Right.
Which
but,
seems to imply that they have an actual king.
Right, but they don't because it's not like they're like sitting around wondering like who their king is.
Yeah, what
like,
happened to your princes?
Or,
yeah, just like, declare someone a king.
Or if there wasn't a princess, like Brendan just said, just... Okay,
just
you're king
one.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, like, you killed the most other giants. I
let's
guess
start a democracy,
people.
Giants. We'll show
right.
those Albions how it's done.
Those Albanites?
Albinos?
Albinos! I'm on board. But yeah, do the giants just sit around on their magic floating island up in the sky just being like...
They do, actually. There's a lot of...
There's
yeah,
so
right.
much.
So much
there's
a lot of body humor.
And
giants are gross, guys. And
yeah.
I don't understand why they have to be gross.
A lot of nose picking.
Yeah.
Why can't they be sanitary giants? And with, like, real clothes
well, here's
and not,
the thing.
Like, shitty rags.
I'm okay with the shitty rags thing. I'm okay with them being a little grimy. I'm okay
right.
with all of that because I'm okay with this idea that they've been kind of living... in an undertended
yeah.
society. That all kind of fits for me as an aesthetic, but it does seem like very deliberate, almost gratuitous choices to, like, have that giant during that, like, cooking scene to just, like, jam his finger up his nose
and
then, like,
eat it.
Yeah.
It's meant for all the kids in the audience in the theater to go, ew!
All the kids
or to, like, giggle and clap.
Cool parents who took them to a PG-13
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, right?
Could arguably be.
So, yeah, there's a lot of, like, half-assed giant politics.
Right.
Like,
so confusing.
Why does Fum, like, what, like, I really want to know about Fum. I really do.
Yeah.
He seems to have, like, there's a lot of close-ups on his face where he's like, oh, I don't like
he
this.
He seems, but he goes along with it for the most part. There's, like,
well,
two scenes.
He doesn't have to for much of it.
Right,
because...
but there's, like, only really two scenes where he, like, acts against him. Like, one, whenever they bring the princess back and Fum's like, I get to eat the princess.
Yeah.
And then later at the end, whenever Fallon is falling into the flaming moat, and, like, Fum just sort of, like, gives him, like, Fallon's like, ah, and Fum's just like, meh.
And there's that idea that's introduced that, like, to them he is Eric the Terrible. But, like, what I'm not clear about is, does that mean there's another side? Or, were the giants always like, oh, delicious humans, let's eat them?
We're really not given enough information to figure that out, necessarily.
No.
But I will say, that was a really cool idea, and I wish they had explored it more, because I thought that was kind of neat, of, like, to the humans he was a hero, but to them he was a villain.
Yeah,
like,
I mean...
that's kind of cool.
Was diplomacy ever a viable option for this encounter? For this first contact scenario? Like...
but to answer your question about Fum, I think they only put in those scenes to set up Fum, I guess, kind of taking over once he thought Fallon is dead
like,
at
the
end.
But
the
thing is, like, if they had cut that out entirely, like, they could have still thought that he had died, and Fum could have just been like, welp, I guess I gotta finish this shit now.
It really,
like,
doesn't change a lot.
Yeah, it doesn't change anyone's motivation.
There's, like, a second of, like, oh, I guess he's gone, let's continue trying to get into the castle and eat some humans.
It's not like Fum goes actively out of his way to sabotage him or anything. No. Like, he stares at him as he, like, falls into a flaying moat, and that's about it.
Which would have been interesting, actually, if he had gone out of his way to, you know, like, trip
to, like,
him up.
Unseat Fallon as
yeah.
But he can't. I mean, I don't know how, again, it's
right,
not
so that's because that's the other thing is, at that point in the movie, Fallon has the magic crown, which he's wearing as a ring, which means it seems to imply that he can control the dragons, much as
the
Eric
giants.
The Great.
The giants.
whatever, guys.
Let me
see. I would like some dragons at the end.
Whatever, nerds.
Just throw some others.
Anyhow, he has this ring, which allows him to control the giants, much as Eric and much as the two were
Well, it's
doing.
A ring on him.
Right, it's a ring because it was a crown. And so
it goes on two fingers.
Yeah,
though,
it's a two-finger ring, which is kind of weird.
Severely hampers your ability to use
that. Hold on.
To point.
Very fashionable.
But the question is, does he have the ability to control the giants like the humans did? And if he does have the ability to control the giants, why didn't he just say, Fum, you stupid fucker, bend your hand under this flaming moat and pick me up?
Yeah.
Also,
was
someone brought up, I forget who it was, but like, was it Meg? Was it you? Yeah, about how does he...
Yeah, that was an issue that I had. I found it weird that the crown seemed to be designed as a tool for humans to use to kind of like... to control the giants and to have some sort of just a power
like,
over them.
They like so bow their heads before, like they're like, oh, it hurts. Like,
yeah, like, oh my goodness. So it seemed weird to me that a giant would then be able to have the same, you know, power just by picking up, like, by picking up a human
thing. Does he say, like,
seemed...
help me get out of the moat, and then he's compelled to help himself on
and then that part was just really weird.
You help those who
like...
help themselves, Fallon!
And then that just kind of capped it all up. I thought it was weird and to start with, that he's able to pick up this crown that seems to be intended for human use to have control over the giants, and somehow it works for him too, being a giant himself. And then, he's stuck under the moat, and then, like, oh, well, it doesn't work in water. Like, what's the reasoning behind, you know, if he's wearing it and orders people to help him, it's like, oh, nope.
That's an especially good point, because we even saw earlier Fallon specifically almost being, like, physically buffeted by the aura this crown gives off.
They always
like,
wince.
When Stanley Tucci, like, strides in with it, everyone seems to be in pain
from
how it's compelling them, but that's the only scene where we see it have that effect.
No, it happens
at
again
the
end.
At the very end, whenever Jack comes
when
back
Fum
with the crown.
When Fum comes in, and, like, and he's, like, there is someone behind
him
again.
He's, like, kind of uneasy, and then they all sort of, like, drop their weapons
they
and bend down.
They, like, feel, like, tired. It's like they're, like, getting kryptonite.
I think it's, like, the battle droids at the end of episode one.
Yeah.
This is broken!
The crown, the way that the crown works, and, like, it all ties into this other aspect of the movie, which is that it builds all of this mythology of, like, The monks wanted to find God, so they built magic beans, and then the giants came when they did the beanstalk, and they had to make a magic crown out of a giant heart. And what it reminds me of is, like, introducing a lot of stuff into this fairy tale, like how Maleficent did.
Mm-hmm.
But Maleficent, like, the fairy tale way, there was, like, the real kingdom and, like, the fairy kingdom, and the fairy kingdom was full of, like, Jim Henson CGI creatures.
Avatar rejects.
Yeah, Avatar rejects is a better word for them. And, like... Did I? I didn't need that in my Sleeping Beauty world.
But I will say, do you know what that detail reminded me of and kind of some of these details? I actually kind of liked in concept. Like, yes, it's silly. The monks created magic beans because they wanted to grow vine to find God. But I actually thought that was kind of an interesting idea. What it reminded me, though, of trying to inject this fairy tale-ness into our own actual history, it reminded me a lot of Gregory Maguire, the guy who wrote, like, Wicked and Mirror, Mirror and all of these different books, where he would try to fold that in. And I'm like, ostensibly it's an interesting idea, and I think it could have been executed in kind of a cool thing, but they throw it out there and then don't really follow up.
In isolation, I'm not opposed to any of these, like, these flavor details that you add to the world, but, like, there's so much in this movie that, like, you took this simple Jack and the Beanstalk story, which you could spend an entire 90 minutes just telling the simple story straight up, no changes.
Yeah.
And you wanted to add all these, like, other details that, like, create more questions that need to be explained within the movie. You only have 2 hours. It's just the fact that, like, they get up there and there's sheep up there.
Right. Little, like, normal-sized sheep.
Normal-sized sheep. And then I go, why aren't the sheep giant? How do they live off normal-sized sheep? One giant would need, like, that entire herd of sheep.
Like, as an appetizer.
What do they eat? What do the giants eat? And then there was, like, a trap. And I'm like, wait, do they herd those sheep? Or is that trap for sheep? Or is that a trap
for
trap?
People? Yeah.
Or why?
Predators.
But then
if it's for predators, are there predators? Do the giants have natural predators? Like, are there wolves up there now that there are sheep? Like, why?
Weirder still. Actually, so the sheep are the only other animals we see up there. But weirder still
pigs.
Is...
Bees.
Pigs.
There are pigs.
You're right.
Because they're eating literal pigs in a blanket.
Well, because, I was bringing up the cooking scene.
Yeah.
In which a giant named Cook...
spelled with an E.
Spelled with an E, so sorry.
Cuke.
Is preparing, like, a meal for, like, 100 giants.
Maybe. We don't know how much he's
because he says something about how, like, when he's singing his little fee-fi-fo-fum song as he's cooking, and he says in the line something about how, like, Fallon likes them recently dead or something like that. So I was wondering if he's literally just preparing, like, 2 pigs in a blanket and Ewan McGregor for Fallon.
Oh, maybe.
Like, but I was thinking it might just be a Fallon snack.
I mean, a pig, I guess, is pretty big, but, like, you know, like, a pig is, like, up here.
No, smaller. Try smaller.
Like this?
No, that's a bigger pig. Make it a bigger pig.
Like this?
Ooh, no, that's too big.
That's like a warthog.
Maybe like this?
That's a good pig.
Okay.
That'll do a pig.
It's like a giant boar.
No, but I just thought, I was on your same note, Lee. Like,
That's a somewhat lengthy... like, prolonged cooking process for what is, like, barely a snack.
A snack? Right.
Giants.
Yeah, no, it's like pizza rolls.
And they seem to be immortal as well.
I think they're very long-lived. I assume they're long-lived Fallon remembers being on the ground before when the first beanstalk came
up. So they need to sustain themselves.
And there's no female giants.
Yes.
There's a lot of... I mean, it's just very confusing to me.
It is.
How everything
which is out. Also the lack of female giants, thinking about how, like, in some versions of the fairy tale there is a female giant too, either like a wife or a mother figure or something. So it's not like it's basing off a fairy tale where, like, but there never were lady giants when, like, there was one, like, so would it have killed you?
Hey guys, let's talk about giant sexuality.
Okay. No, I want to hear where you're going. Tell me everything you have to say on the subject right now.
Nothing,
Chris.
I'm so sorry. Blank space.
Fine.
Do you know what I do want to talk about?
What?
Fan favorite Elmont.
Yes. We could talk for an hour about
Ewan McGregor in the prime of his career.
I was just going to say, I think that's one of the great things about Ewan McGregor and why I think that he's a good actor, is because he just can kind of do pretty much anything. He's kind of one of the rare beasts that can kind of do anything. And I know that we were talking about that we all appreciated, like, how he commits to whatever he is, whatever the movie
him
is.
Him and Tooch in this movie are the two actors.
They commit 500%.
Exactly. Any other movie, like, there's plenty of movies that people are just in and you can tell that they're phoning it in, but it never seems that Ewan McGregor is one of those actors that it never seems to be
the
case with him. He's like, all right, this is the movie I'm in, I'm going to give it everything I got, and then he can,
His
hair is superlative.
His hair is amazing.
Oh, he's handsome as fuck.
He's so dashing.
He's so hot in this movie.
So dashing.
When he comes...
So hot.
When he comes onto the... In that first scene, he comes in to, like, save the princess from ruffians.
Badger.
One of which is named Badger. I loved that. Even though this is supposed to be Albion, or I guess, like, ancient England, there is kind of a general kind of cultural mishmash in a lot of the... ways things look. So his armor is, like, a little bit this, a little bit that, a little bit conquistador, a little bit Fantastic. No,
it's Armani
it's
armor.
Amazing.
It is Armani armor.
It's like black and gold detail.
No, black and silver.
He's got studs. He's got
and
like bronze.
And what about the armor?
And
he's got great facial hair, great hair on his head.
It's
hair
very
on his head.
Sleek. It's like sleek armor. It's not like clunky
no.
knight armor.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
Very, like, you can sculpted. You can get a lot done.
Yeah.
And he also
armor.
Brought
you
in.
You can see all the way to Florida.
Oh my god, I just got that.
Welcome.
He also brings such verve to his performance that I really, really appreciated.
Yeah.
He brought in dry wit. He brought in, when it was appropriate, he brought in...
A motorcycle?
Yeah, that was weird, right?
Sorry, he brought in dry wit. He brought in, like, warmth when it was appropriate. He was so good in this movie.
He was excellent.
And the problem with Elmont is that there's not enough.
Not enough.
He's given so much, so many things to do and so many great moments, but I want to care more about him. As an audience watching this movie, I wanted to care more about when his seemingly best friend died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets a little moment where he sets up a little cross up in Giant
Yeah,
Land, and
you're
it's like this
wow.
is a great place for you, Craw.
Would you call that a cross?
I would.
Thank you. Thank you,
you
so
that.
Much, Meg. Thank
you're
you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
These two will not.
No, I will.
If I have to.
When he sets up his cross and he says something like, this is a nice place, like it's such a good view you have here. And it's like, it should be like a sweet little moment between this guy and
but
his bud.
I didn't understand his relationship to
Right,
Carl.
Because right. they have like five lines to each other before
And
that.
Most of them are Ewan McGregor. I don't think Carl talks much to him. But I also thought that there was like a note of sort of like very kind of droll twit to Ewan McGregor's performance, but he didn't oversell it. So it was still
twit.
Like... Fine. I guess what I'm trying to say is there was like an aristocratic feeling to his performance that I feel like he could have oversold and it would have ruined it, but he gave it just
enough. I think he's 100% the medieval Albion Poe Dameron, where he's the older experienced, he's got ranking... In this kingdom, but
it
like he doesn't really flaunt it. He just knows that he's awesome.
He's a good guy. He's like he's friends to all, like a friend to all the children.
Yeah,
it felt like mellow Errol Flynn to me.
Yeah.
He has fun with his rank and as an actor with the role. I think, and also I think just as a Scotsman, he kind of liked.
I think he was enjoying playing
kind of like
Nazi
Boer
British.
War and era English, where it's like tally ho lads and just tally-ho.
Stop Jerry at every
just kind of like wink winky.
I feel like there should have been like an introduction scene for him where we get to introduce his problems. They should have gotten like resolution at the end.
Do you know who did get an introduction scene and very much deserved it was the Tooch?
Yes. Well, actually, what I was going to say is, similarly, I think the Tooch is underutilized in this movie for what he brings to the role. Because it seems, again, with him, there are things that are further implied. Like, he has this magic crown and beans, but we don't have a sense of if these are a thing that the kingdom... Like, ostensibly, we believe that the kingdom at large thinks the story of the giants is a legend. And therefore, like, he shouldn't... Like, all Stanley Tucci does is go to the grave of Eric the Great, which is under the castle, throw open the top,
out
the crown and beans, and there they are. So, like, really, this shouldn't be a legend because you can easily verify...
it's very easy to assume... It's moderately easy, not very easy, but to assume that, like, if you found the crown and beans in a grave,
it
but you thought
not.
It was a legend, that you're like, oh, this is
just
some nonsense.
A regular crown and beans that, like, this they thought
symbolic.
Was...
Yeah.
Right. And, like, and that's fair, too, but, like, nonetheless...
It's crazy.
It's there, yeah. And I think, really, we've talked at length, I think, amongst ourselves as to how also Stanley Tucci is terrific in anything ever.
Like, honestly, I think, like, when you got Tucci in this role... He is playing like a scenery chewing mustache.
And so I'm like, sorry, scenery chewing is one of my favorite.
But they really did. They just gave him a platter of scenery, and he was like, "Don't mind if I do."
All you can eat buffet of scenery. Like, there's a lot of other things that the character could have gone, but like, I don't know that Stanley Tucci was. I think like Stanley Tucci wanted that. I think he wanted to play the like.
Oh yeah, I think he was totally game. There just wasn't
enough. Because my problem really is that he gets dispatched of like midway through the movie.
It's like 60%.
Yeah, about 60%, and Ewan McGregor kills him, and then he's gone. And he's a fun presence, and I think that there could have been more to do with him, really. And so it's just he does wonderful with what little crap he has to work with because he's Stanley Tucci and he's fantastic in everything. But it feels like a waste of his considerable talents to have him in this.
What was the fun reason why he took this role?
He took this role because he wanted to do a British accent.
And he also took his role in Captain America because he wanted to do a German accent.
That's
right. Which I admire.
I was going to say, he just seems like a completely delightful person.
And he took the role in Burlesque because he wanted to fuck a hot young stud.
Ah, didn't we all? But just this is me a slight sidebar, but I love Stanley Tucci to death. I even watched a few episodes of a wine tasting show that he had for a short period of time on Netflix, and it was him. I swear to God,
deep cuts,
a taste of the Tucci. Amazing.
Well, but there was an episode where he just has Patricia Clarkson on, and they just taste wine together.
That's delightful.
And my heart grew a million sizes. Like it was.
Go to the doctor.
We should have gotten the Grinch to see this thing.
Yeah.
that's all we needed.
We talked about how he's John Krasinski's brother-in-law, right?
Yes.
Is he?
Yeah, he's married to Emily Blunt's sister, who's a literary agent. And so, like, they're all related now.
Do you want to know how that got set up?
No.
She became, like, best friends.
I mean, I do want to hear it.
But Emily Blunt became best friends with Stanley Tucci on the set of Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, my God.
And was like, you have to meet my sister. And then they got married, which
that's
is
adorable.
A beautiful story.
Yes.
It's really sweet. His wife had died, though, not that long prior to
it. It's true.
Yeah, she had cancer, I think, or something. I've read a lot of, like, interviews with Stanley Tucci. Because I really do like Stanley Tucci.
I want to believe that he and Ewan McGregor were, like, meeting up at craft services being like, can you believe this?
I imagine they were just meeting up and being like, guys, we're killing it, right? Like, we're doing fantastic work.
Game.
They just have, like, I'm sure they were, like, best buds being go to up to 12.
Yeah.
We're gonna go nuts, guys.
Meanwhile, Ian McShane is like, I gotta, like, go retile my kitchen with the money I just made today.
See, Lovejoy plays her dad. And he's really fun.
Lovejoy.
It's really weird to me that Lovejoy is your point of reference, because I feel like that's an odd one. Like, mine is Deadwood, because
yeah, I was trying to
think Deadwood, because Al Swearengen.
I was trying to think of who the fucking dumbass character he played in the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, the fourth Pirates of the Black...
I know
he was Blackbeard.
Remember.
I honestly think he was Blackbeard in the fourth one, but anyhow.
But,
so he plays her...
Ian McShane.
I think he's good. Like him.
He's fine. I just think he wasn't... I don't think he was giving it all the Ian McShane...
Well, no, he's giving...
That's, like, Ian McShane does two things. Like, he does, like... crazy swearing a la Deadwood.
Yeah.
Or he does like a subtle low-key thing, which is what he was doing here. And I've seen him do that subtle low-key thing, and I think it's very fine. And I think, honestly, like, I really like, for the most part, the way the relationship between the king and his daughter and Isabel. Like, I thought it was... The only issue I had with it is that, honestly, he didn't seem like the type of guy who would want to marry her off to someone.
No!
Yeah, I thought that was very strange, especially when she comes back, and he's very quick to admit that he's wrong, which I thought was great, because usually you have to deal with kings being
I'm infallible!
But exactly. And then I loved the line where he was like, I would have trusted the kingdom to him, and worse, I would have trusted you with him.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, wow, like, that he prioritizes his daughter over the kingdom, and clearly, and in other examples of the movie, too, clearly shows a lot of genuine love for her, so I thought that was strange that he was like, oh, well, I'm glad that I didn't end up forcing you to marry that guy, because he would have been a real jerk.
My other criticism... Oh, sorry.
Sorry. I think the moment where he decides he has to cut the beanstalk down...
That was good.
...is, like, a really great moment.
Great!
Yeah. Where, like, a giant falls down, and he's like, well... He doesn't even say, like, what do you think we should do, general? He's like, don't you think we should cut this down? And the general's like, I love that the kingdom is like, we don't want to tell you to kill your daughter.
Yeah, I thought that was...
But he's like, no, I make the decision. And, like, they all had to, like, help
him. It was a surprising moment of pathos
in
this movie. I felt that Ian McShane sold really well.
Yeah.
Where I wasn't... And as much as I was mostly enjoying this movie up until that point, I was not expecting that.
Mm-hmm.
I was not expecting... the relative moral ambiguity of my daughter is up there along with a handful of my men. I'm considering cutting this their only way out.
What's more important to me, my daughter or the kingdom? And he makes the very difficult decision that he has to save the kingdom. And so he decides to chop down the beanstalk. And it's a well done scene.
Yeah. My only criticism on Meg's point, I love...
How dare!
Throw your drink at him.
Ah!
Smash!
You actually did it!
It's water, dear listener. Fear not.
Sorry.
Oh, it's fine. It's microfiber.
It's great.
Go well on. Dry.
What was your thing?
My... I'm all about it.
Like you, McGregor, I'm fully committed to every role that I take on.
You know how to measures with Meg Cohen.
My hair is not as fabulous, but, that can, you know.
Can we expect that to be your next podcast, No Half Measures with Meg Cohen? Or would it be All the Way with Meg Cohen?
We'll work on that title.
Okay, sure.
This backdoor pilot needs to.
Yeah. Mm.
That's a thing.
It is, I know.
Homo.
I am a homosexual, and so are you. But
what?
No, my only criticism, with as cool as I thought that was, that he admits he's wrong, what I would have liked for them to have brought up that entire issue of that, like, I want you to marry someone, more than one other time in the movie.
Yes.
Because it's brought up at the very beginning, and then they've just ignored through most of the movie. They make, like, a passing reference to it, like, once.
It was a very weird switch, because they do set that up at the beginning, where he says, you're marrying Roderick, and that's it. And she's like, but he's twice my age, and I should marry for love. And he's like, well, that's what's happening. And so I thought as much as I liked that he was like, oh my gosh, what a mistake that was, it was, like, a very weird...
It's
like,
a quick 180.
It was a 180, yeah. Definitely. So,
also,
like,
I just kind of thought of this, but... It's weird that this is, we're again in this world where it's like, it's fucking, actually, it was really England the whole time. Which means there are other countries. This isn't like an isolated fairy tale kingdom. Why are we doing the marry your advisor thing? It's 100% always marry another king.
To consolidate power, yeah.
Marry another, like, so, why is it foreign prince? Why is it like marry Roderick, who's like...
Marry this guy who works for me.
Yeah.
And has three titles.
Like, why, and again, it's a
oh my god, thing. That was a weird scene.
Why would Jasmine marry Jafar? Like, no, she would
marry... Well, no, so they want him. So, okay, let's take a sidebar and talk about Aladdin. Okay. So in Aladdin, what actually happens is the Sultan brings in princes to, like, meet
her. That's
right, that's right. And then Jafar, like, comes up with, like, a fake law where he's like, why, if the princess doesn't marry someone, she'll have to marry me. And the Sultan, like, is hypnotized, so he's like, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So they actually did, like, go away to explain what that was in Aladdin. It would have been nice if maybe they had done that here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, we were, like, talking, like, Aladdin similarities in this movie, where it starts off like in this kingdom where the princess is like in disguise and she's milling about with the commoners, and you know, she meets like a scummy little like street rat type guy, and then he saves her from some bad guys at the end, and meanwhile she's engaged to marry this like evil dick in her father's court,
the grand vizier.
Yeah, well, that would be me. it's you know, if you're going to rip off something shamelessly, there are far worse things to be ripping off than Aladdin, where it kind of works for that movie, but it was very, I don't know, it felt very trite and obvious in the way it did that there.
It did feel like a little bit of a wink to the audience when Stanley Tucci's character is there. He and his, like, goony henchmen are menacing Jack, Nicholas Holt, and he says at one point, like, well, the only three people that can order the execution of someone is... Like the Lord Constable, the Lord Steward,
and the advisor to the king. And unfortunately for you, I'm all three.
Like, that was fun. I mean, it was stupid, but it was fun.
You brought a near Tooch level performance.
That was...
Tooch and
the
Tucci
Award goes to...
Tucci Award.
It, as we said, it is extraordinarily weird that this guy somehow wound up with all three of those titles, which feels like a bad decision on the king's
Yeah, it also feels like an obvious little finger play, right? Where, like, you'd get suspicious of this guy who's, like, snapping up all the titles.
All these titles, yeah.
I also want to point out that this weirdo, who is such a campy villain, also hid the giant controlling crown in a flower pot.
Yeah.
That gets overturned in, what, like, the royal greenhouse?
It
never got that.
Keep his money in the freezer? Like,
in the mattress.
Yeah. There are no freezers. This was medieval Albion.
Stuffed it.
But Roddy does. Roddy keeps money in the freezer.
That was only hint, by the way, that I had that this was England. When they kept calling it Albion, I was like, hey there.
I mean, I
see what you're doing.
I thought it could have easily been some other place.
It could have been a fictional place until they did, like, in Fable, the land is, the video game, the land is called Albion, but it's very clearly not England. It's just, like, we use the poetic name for England.
Sure.
Yeah, I thought it was
up for grabs, yes. Like, fantasy kingdom.
And God knows there were so many different other cultural visual references being folded in. Like, my favorite character.
The
royal general, whose name I don't even remember.
I think he's just the general.
Well, he has a name.
Yeah, they say, like, a name.
It's like
Elton. Yeah.
Enten or something like that.
Enten.
But he just comes in, monocle, big old mustache, beautiful, like, feather plumed helmet.
He looks like a Kaiser that got lost.
Yeah. Every time you hear, like, yeah, you want, you expect to hear him like shouting in like a bad German accent.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a simpering S&M German.
Oh, I have lost
cut down the beanstalk.
Cut down the vine.
My Führer, they are sending the giant beanstalk.
Oh, spank me.
Well, shall we move to another point?
The only thing we really haven't touched on, I think, is a big thing in this movie was the fact that it starts off very strongly with a dual protagonist.
Yeah.
Which we comes up a lot, I have to say, on this podcast. We hit on this topic a lot of dual protagonists.
We unanimously loved how this dual protagonist thing was set up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's out of all the ones, like, out of, like, we got, like, Lone Ranger and Bunraku were other ones that had sort of, like, these two characters that you focus on. But out of all of them, this is the most clear, like, these characters are equal importance. And it's done through the intercutting of, like, the prologue tale. Where they're telling the story and it cuts between like little Jack hearing the story and little Princess Isabel hearing the story.
It also sets up a thread. So, I mean, unfortunately, this great setup is for naught because it's abandoned to mostly focus on Jack.
Yeah.
But the other thing it cuts out that Meg and I were kept looking at each other about was they set up such a great feminist aspect to the story that is then abandoned, like, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
If Meg, would you like to walk us through that one?
I would love to. So I liked very much that there is a queen at the beginning of this fairy tale and that she's talking to her daughter and is doing the story time business. And I thought that it was excellent that during the story time business, she mentions, you know, someday you're going to be a queen and I want you to have adventures and go out because that will make you a stronger queen. And I thought that was great. And then 10 years later, where did the queen go? She is gone.
Here's a theory, and it's not explained, but do you think that the queen did, this is the thing that the queen wanted for the daughter, and then the queen died, and the king got very protective of the only other figure in his life, and was like, no adventures, because
oh, no, that died. All makes sense. I was just kind of bummed out, because I'm like, yes, there's a queen at the beginning, yeah. Oh, she's gone.
Do you feel like maybe she was cast, and then they're like, okay, it's gonna be a queen, and that's, she's gonna be in the movie, and
no,
like,
I think that they,
fuck, Ian McShane just called back, and he says he's a go for the king.
No, I think that she was always destined for death.
So there's almost always in these stories, there's only one.
You know, which you come to understand, but I was a little excited, because you started with two, I was like, of course.
Yeah.
And then I really liked, as a small note, I liked when she's escaping out of the castle, she's rocking some McGonagall escape outfit with her hat and her cape.
She was fabulous.
Her outfits are all amazing.
Yeah, her armor. Excellent. She has terrific armor.
And it's refreshingly not sexualized armor.
No, it's practical armor.
Yeah.
Practical armor.
It's gold.
Yes.
And it's very glam. Oh,
she's a princess.
It's what I would wear if I was rolling a female paladin. Sorry.
Sorry.
No, please.
So I also liked, too, and Lee and I were talking about this, where they do end up going up the beanstalk separately, so it does sort of get set up as we have to rescue the princess. But what I did like is the way that they get her up the beanstalk. It's not like this giant comes down and grabs her and, you know, whisks her away. I like that they set it up that it's sort of like a natural disaster.
Like
a magical natural, because it comes up through the house. She and Jack are both struggling in the house, trying to get out of the house. Jack's trying to get her out of the house. So it's more like she kind of just gets, you know, separated. I could see a male character having the same issue and being stuck up this beanstalk. So I like that they kind of set that up a little bit. And there's a lot of that in the story where they kind of just tweak things a little bit and you're like, oh, that's nice, but they never quite follow through with it as far as I think that they could have, and you're kind of just like waiting for more.
I think where it lost, like, that dual protagonist thing was when, like, the princess made it up to the top and he didn't, and then it instantly became, now we all have to save the princess.
Yeah. And there was, at one point, they did try to kind of throw that a little bit of a bone, where they're like, why are there marks of the princess climbing up further into the island and not back down?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, she's trying to have her own adventure. And I thought, okay, you're kind of going in the direction I like, but then you're right, it's just, then she's in a cage, and then she needs everyone to save her, and it's just sort of like, meh.
Yeah.
I respect how she carved her, like, initials on the tree.
Yeah.
So, like, she, like, clearly, like, I like that she's, like, a smart kid. She knows what she's doing. She knows to, like, read clues to help.
It shows,
like,
she's resourceful. Yeah. She's not completely inept. You know, just genuinely overpowered.
Yeah. Also, though, if a really smart princess would have stayed the fuck.
Well, and then Elmer mentions, you know, maybe somebody's like, why would she leave? And he said, I don't know, maybe she's hungry.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe she has to use the bathroom. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of reasons may need to leave.
And we didn't see her get caught, so it's very easily that she could have, like, instantly zipped off, and the giant was like, hey!
Hey, baby, hey, baby!
Is that how you would be if you were a giant?
Hey, girl. What you doing?
Oh, my God. I love how giant
living. Wing. Picking up chicks at the edge literally of your sky kingdom. Literally picking up chicks.
Why don't you smile? Oh. It's getting a little too real. Oh. Let's take it back.
But yeah, I wish that the movie had, like, kept equal focus on... Like, I there's ways you could do it. They could have been together the whole time. They could have still been separated, but, like, we focus equally on their plights. But, like, there's that time jump where she goes up in the thing, and the next time we see her, she's in a cage. And that's when you realize, like, she's no longer the dual protagonist. Mm-mm. Because we didn't see any of that. She's just in a cage and talking to Fallon. Yeah. She does get her fair share of, like, good moments. But it's, like, Elmont level, where, like...
Yeah.
I think that, like, we're missing some stuff with her.
Right. We could have had more.
Yeah.
I feel like the movie is the three of them. They're, like, the three central characters. Like...
Yeah.
It should have been, like, a sort of Star Wars triumvirate thing. Right. Where, like, there's equal focus on all of these three characters. Right. And they all have the stuff to do.
Right. And while there is clearly, like, a main focus in Star Wars, I think, like, they're the other, like, either, depending what whether you look at The New Hope or The Force Awakens... Either one, you have, like, a primary character, but I don't think you would ever argue that the other two characters are underserved.
Or don't matter.
Right. Yeah, so, and I think, like, had it had more of that sort of feel to it, it would have been better off in the end.
Yeah, the only other thing I had, which we touched on a little bit with the fart jokes, is the mismatch of humor and tone.
Yeah.
You've got the precision F-bomb of, like, oh, fuck, at the end, which is, like, such a cop-out cheap...
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Right. Yeah. So at the end, as the beanstalk is popping out of Fallon, it chokes Big Fallon, and the vines are crushing Little Fallon, and Little Fallon screams, "Oh, fuck!" And then his eyeball pops out.
Yeah, which is another 3D.
He must have been saying, "Oh, fam.
Oh, fam, I'm sorry that I didn't respect your opinions on how to rule the giant."
Would that you were here now, we would have such discussions.
Such discussions.
Such discussions.
Oh my thumb, oh my ducats.
there's the gross out humor with the giant.
The farts, the nose picking. Yeah. But then there is some effective humor that I thought was actually kind of poking fun at the genre a little bit in a way I enjoyed. Particularly my favorite moment was a sequence in which King Ian McShane is lecturing the princess about having to marry Stanley Tucci. And he's having his portrait painted, and he's wearing this very elaborate ermine-trimmed cape that's, like, going halfway down this great hall. And then at one point he just steps out of it, and it's just, like, a hard shell that stands up on its own. Yeah. I giggled out loud. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are other lines that other people thought you'd fall flat. I did not mind it as much. The bookend line, "There's something behind me."
Yeah.
I didn't like it. In the end, I was okay with it in the beginning.
I just think I've seen that so many times before where someone says, like, uh-oh, there's something standing behind me.
Right. Isn't there?
Like, it's just, if they had not even said the line, if they had just, like, had, like, a look of realization on Jack's face, who's like, oh, like, shit, something's going on back here. But, like, the fact that he actually says to, like, again, it's just one of those, like, dumb, like, who are you saying this to, Jack? You're saying this to, like, the peasants all around you? Like...
Yeah. That was
you're saying this for the audience.
Like, I was going to say, that was sort of one of, like, those leaning on the fourth wall moments, which they more directly did later on with Ewan McGregor, who straight up tells Stanley Tucci that Ewan McGregor, is not the hero of this story. And so there is a part of that I sort of appreciate, where they are trying to bring in a drier aspect to this. But on the other hand, it feels like they're trying to weld on a sense of irony without, like, really integrating it fully into this world. And so that was what kind of reminded me of Lone Ranger, where they're like, well, no one's going to like this unless we undercut all of this with a healthy dose of irony.
Yeah, I think some of the other humor, though, just as pop shots that fell flat, like, the crowd telling a cake method of avoiding fears. Yeah,
whenever you're afraid, just, like, just think of something in front of you.
Bizarre and strange, like a big cake.
Like a big cake.
Just imagine, like, a big cake in front of you, and then you try to eat it.
Her accent work is amazing.
It
seemed again, just kind of going back to that, we're not sure kind of what audience we're going for. There was a lot of things that seemed a lot of wink wink, like kids will think this is funny because this is a very obvious joke, and then other ones that were like a little bit subtler, so it was kind of like, well, we know you can do subtle humor, so why are you kind of trying to throw it in people's faces if you're not, like, it's very much a, like, we need to do this very obviously for children, but it's a PG-13 movie, so...
Yeah.
It's strange to me that they wanted this PG-13 rating for this movie.
It's very violent.
It is. It's weirdly violent. Like, the battle at the end is relatively violent. The demise of Fallon is pretty violent. There's a lot of people getting, like, their heads bitten off. So, like, it is sort of strange, because you would think, like, I know there are movies like Snow White and the Huntsman, which were, like, going for a different audience. Like, they're going for, like, you know, like, the teenage girl who wants to see, like, a romance sort of thing. And, like, this ideally should be aimed for, like, probably, like, 10-year-old boys, I would imagine. Right. But it's why would you chase that PG-13 for something like this? Like, if you're going for a Star Wars demographic, which it feels like they probably are, you want a PG rating for this. You don't want PG-13.
It feels like it's skewing younger.
Yeah, it's inconsistent. Yeah.
You can't have, like, the PG-13 for the violence and then try to get away with fart jokes all the time.
Right.
Or cutting off the word fuck. I'm really surprised that was in there.
I just thought it didn't belong. It was, like, anachronistic and wrong. And
yeah, stupid. It was just... It really does take you out of it, because
it absolutely did.
It would be like...
I was like, what is this? Like,
it'd be like if a character in Star Wars said shit or fuck. Like, yeah. It just was like, what the hell? Like, this is, like... People don't say this in Star Wars.
Fie on it. Fie.
Fie. Fie.
But yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about my favorite new segment, Looking to Score, where we talk about the soundtrack of this movie.
Okay, do you want to talk about the soundtrack?
I want to talk about the soundtrack for a little bit. As a point of note, the composer who did this, his name is John Ottman, who's worked with Bryan Singer on a lot of movies, and what I always think is interesting about John Ottman is that he's also an editor. And so for the majority of movies that Bryan Singer has done with him, he has been the editor and the composer, which I think is a really neat thing to, like, to be cutting this movie as you're doing the music. I mean, I'm sure he's not literally doing it, like, you know, at the same time, but, like, the fact that you can cut this movie with the music in mind, I think is really fascinating. And I'm not super familiar with a lot of the stuff John Ottman has done. Like, he's done all he didn't do the first X-Men movie, but he's done all the other Bryan Singer ones after that, so 2, Days of Future Past, The Upcoming Apocalypse.
First Class.
No, that wasn't Bryan Singer.
It wasn't?
No, it was Matthew Vaughn. So, and the scores to the X-Men movies that he's done have been sort of more atmospheric, I think, in nature than anything. Like, there is a main X-Men theme that I can pick out for you, but there's almost nothing else. And I suspect that's what Bryan Singer wants from these movies, is that he wants it to be sort of like a background music thing and doesn't want you to take it out of it. As opposed to, like, when Bryan Singer did Superman Returns, which you're probably, Lee, more familiar with than I am, John Ottman also was the one who did the score for that, and he worked with themes from John Williams from the previous Superman movies, which I thought was a really neat touch. And I think, honestly, like, the score for this movie feels closer to something like Superman Returns. It's almost John Williams-y at points. It's a little, like, 90s live-action Disney in other respects mixed with John Williams, which is not a bad thing. And to be honest, like, I quite enjoyed the score for this movie. I thought it was very fun, and I think the score does a better job of portraying what this movie wanted to be than what it actually ended up being.
Yeah.
Again, it's something closer to a Star Wars type movie, which I know we're saying a lot, but I think that's what they're going for.
Star Wars always finds a way into our discussions.
Well, I think they tried for more humor than was necessary. I didn't need to be, like, forcibly get laughs. Like, I just wanted a fun adventure.
Yeah, and again, like, there's a reason I think that most of the effective humor comes from, like, Ewan McGregor, who's just doing that very sort of dry.
Just his performance is funny, and just Stanley Tucci is amusing to watch.
Right.
The inadvertent stuff that is done through acting, as opposed to the deliberate attempts at jokes, are the ones that really get you.
The movie was pretty well cast. I don't think anyone was bad in the movie.
Yeah. No.
Like, I liked saying Ian McShane. I thought, like, Bill Nighy is just fun. Like,
I thought Nicholas Holt was a great Jack.
Yeah, I did too. I don't remember for life. I don't know anything. The actress who played Isabel.
I was going to say, like Doth Brand Sophie Turner. There.
Yeah, she really is.
She's Brand Sophie Turner.
Super off brand Sansa.
She was
then
great.
What did we call the guy who plays the general? Was off brand James Broadbent.
Yeah. It's a good cast. There was, I don't know who any of the other giants were. I don't know if they were anyone at all, frankly. But, like, Bill Nighy is fun. Like, the second Pirates of the Caribbean movie is something I enjoy watching, if only because I think he is good in it. Like,
he's
fun just doing his ridiculous, like, do you feel death shtick throughout the entire movie, which, to be fair, like, is almost the exact same thing he's doing in this movie. Like, he's pretty much just doing Davy Jones again.
Yeah. He even has that monologue when he first is talking to the princess about, like,
Santa,
do you believe in God?
Yeah, do you believe in God?
You know, he's like, He's very fond of monologuing when he's hunting humans. He's like, "Yes, we always smell fear."
Yes, he does have his, like, super villainy monologue. He's like, "We never forget a smell, princess." All that crap. Which is, it's fun because it's Bill Nye. It's ridiculous, but, like, fuck it, it's Bill
Nye. Do you think that makes him sort of almost like the genre Pacino, where it's like, we're not going to bring him in unless there's, like, at least one or two juicy monologues for him to blast at campy actors?
I don't know
that he, like, monologues and all of the things. I think that's just a trope that came up with a couple of...
I think it's easy to do with villains, too, because villains are, like, in these sort of
movies... ham-handed
villains. They're the ones who want to have, like, their, like, big speech about, like, before they do something evil.
Listen, I got a lot of beefs, and you're going to hear about all of them.
I have 30 grievances, and I'm going to list them all now. Grievance one.
If you have an escape plan, you better get working on it. We got about 30 minutes of this.
You've got plenty of time.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, let's move on, and let's talk about our fixes. I am happy to start, but I also will concede.
You can start.
Please.
I'll start. This is one of the easiest movies to fix, honestly. I think so many pieces are there. Mm-hmm. I think it was, like, a good start. And very simply, I think the Star Wars triumvirate technique of setting up, like, Elmont, Princess Isabel, and Jack as, like, the three main characters, they should all get intro scenes. We don't meet Elmont in the intro. We just get, like... He just shows up and he's just there, and you're like, oh, okay.
Yay, Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, he's so hot.
I'm here for this because super you're
hot.
Here.
Yeah.
Your hair
super
is
hot, super dashing.
Very.
Super dashing.
He was giving me a lot of Cary Elwes in Princess Bride.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. I think that's why you have these three main characters. I think that if there's a way to not involve, like, this sort of saving the princess, like, don't lose the princess so quick. Like, even if they get separated, show me what she's doing in the meantime. Show me, like, is she trying to, like, talk to the giants diplomatically and then that fails, blah, blah, blah. Like, I want focus on her throughout the movie. I need to cut some of this stuff out of this movie. And I might want to cut the crown, or I might want to cut the fact that there's, like, 100 giants and they don't have a king, but they should have a king, and there's dissent in the ranks, and it's very confusing. So, honestly, like, I could see there being a situation where there's, like, only a couple giants left, and they're bigger, more threatening giants, not just, like, 6-to-1 scale, where they're not actually that threatening because they still have to lay siege on a castle and they can't just, like, Godzilla through it.
They need grappling hooks.
Drawbridge is a real problem.
Guys. I also love that they run up to him like, whoops, there's a wall because we're not getting in.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shoot. Arrows in the face? This is totally going to take my giant body down.
A couple arrows just, like, knock these fuckers down.
Yeah.
And it's really weird. I think, like, if there was only, like, a couple giants, like, you know, a dozen or less, then, like, suddenly it's more that, like, this is an ancient, like, we don't really understand them because this is, like, a dying race and we haven't seen them in hundreds of centuries. We didn't know they were real, and it's like, oh my god, these things, and you could be more mysterious and not have me question where's their food source and all that nonsense. And I don't know about anyone else, but please lose the fact that it's real England. It's not real England. I don't like it.
My fix is very similar to Lee's, but for one very major element. So yes, I'm losing the fact that it's real England. Even though I love that as a color detail, it's too big of a door to open to have the monks create the beans to build a beanstalk to God. I love that idea. I think it's bonkers. But my main fix to this is, for me, the CGI of the giants was... on the one hand, it was sort of entertainingly cartoonish. On the other hand, it was sort of too muddy, too photorealistic, at least an attempt in that direction. My fix is... just animate the whole thing. You could have gotten away with so much more and it wouldn't have looked half as cheap if everything was animated. Even if you took it in the direction of the prologue of this movie is told partially through animation that involves this kind of like almost like wooden puppet motif. And I guess what I'm saying is pick a stylized animation. It could be like Secret of the Kells. That was beautiful, simple, great to watch. I think they could have achieved a much more effective movie if they had picked a simple animation style like that and just ran with it.
Meg?
So I'm kind of leaning a lot on Lee's. It's got a lot that's already there, so it's a lot of just tweaking and cutting things down and deciding on what we're going to, like, let's decide what rating we're going to go for, let's decide what audience we're going to go for. Definitely, definitely second that let's have the triumvirate of people. I always want more Ewan McGregor in movies again. But again, I really enjoyed the Elmont character. I want more of him in there. I want a better introduction for him. I want more of the relationship between him and the princess established because I thought that was good. We don't have to go super far into that, but I could have used another scene. And of course, I'm all about, I want princesses to have more stuff to do.
Yep.
I really would have liked her to remain as the dual protagonist. if you even want to switch it up. Because there were a lot of times in the movie where I was like, this feels a little bit more modern. I like that we're kind of pushing that if you want to push it all the way and have her just take over and kind of supersede mm-hmm. Jack as the protagonist, I would be down for that.
Yeah.
Where she has to save him.
I'm always down for like, oh, this situation is, I'm better at this. Like if there was like a scene where like something that she's better at doing.
Right.
That like they would like, that, you know, they're these people that have complementary abilities. Like
the Fury Road thing.
I was about to say.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Would you take on a Fury Road dynamic?
I would be happy to see that if you want to go all the way. Like I'm always up for that, but even if you don't want to take it that far, just like Lee was saying, if we are going to set, I'm fine with separating them, but mm-hmm. let's see what the princess is doing in the meantime to kind of, because you get glimpses of that where she's being interrogated and she won't give up anything, but I really would like to see more of her. And then if we're going to keep the crown, which I'm kind of going back and forth on because the mechanics are not really
clear
on how it works, but if we're going to keep the crown, why doesn't she have it at the end? Because at the end they give it to, I know, but like the whole story in the beginning is that we gave it to Eric and he rules the kingdom and it's like, she's the royalty, let's give the crown over to her. And then if she's like, hey, this is my boy Jack and I want to, you know, make sure a marriage happens, that's great, she can set that up, they can still do that. I did like the romance, that was something that I appreciated. While there were times where I felt it was a little like trying to hit the audience in the face with like, look, there, we want them to be together. Like they had a lot of really nice little moments, which if they just kept those and cut out the,
you like, understood why they liked each other.
They had natural chemistry.
Yeah. Right. So I liked that the romance, I liked that in general, it wasn't a forced romance. I could see them getting together and it's not just a matter of, well, here's two pretty people, let's put them together.
Yeah.
So, but I would like her, you know, to, you know, kind of assume the royalty. Cause there's a lot of times where they're talking about her, you're going to be the queen, you need to take command. So I would have liked to have seen her kind of step towards that at the end, and then of course if she wants to bring the romance in and make sure the king changes the law and all of that. So basically, I want more princess, let's
she
get some more
crown on, and then
put the crown on and walk like, out there, and then the giants
then be like
her.
You have a problem with the new matrilineal society, giants, bitch,
this is
like,
the new order.
If you don't let me marry Jack, I'm gonna have these giants. Yeah. What do you think about that?
So yes, more power to the princess and more Elmont. And then yeah, just like you were saying with the giants, if we're going to introduce mythology, let's pick out the parts that we can introduce without having to open a million doors.
Yeah,
to, you know, let's pick one hallway to go down.
Yeah.
And just just kind of just tailor things.
Yeah,
better.
Okay, so what I had is actually building off of what Chris had said about it being an animated movie. There's sort of like this interesting little note that for a while Disney was working on an adaptation of Jack and the Beanstalk, I believe in the mid-2000s, called You Don't Know Jack About the Beanstalk.
Wow.
Where, I know, right? Terrible.
Are you kidding me?
Subtangled. No, I'm not kidding you. I wish.
Lee almost looks offended by the fact that this movie existed as an idea.
You should be
offended
by this.
You said it, I said, wow,
title.
And then I realized, like, that sounds like a joke. And then you weren't.
No, kidding. I swear to God, that's true. And what they were, like, reconceiving it as was an action movie based on Jack and the Beanstalk. So basically, this, is what they were doing. Then this came out, and they were like, oh, we can't do this anymore. And so now, like, they have a new movie called, like, Gigantic, I think, coming out in 2 years.
Yeah.
Which has something to do with, like, Jack and a baby giant.
That's, like, the new Disney approach where it's going to be, like, it's going to be a twist.
Yeah.
And the giant's going to be friendly, and they're going to be best friends. And I'm actually, that could be pretty good.
No, I'm on board. Like, you know, they did some interesting stuff with Rapunzel and Tangled.
She's a 10-year-old giant. She's not a baby.
Okay,
she's like a spunky 10-year-old girl, and he's an adult.
Okay, but I'm into that. I'm interested in seeing what they've been on a roll lately. So I'm intrigued by what they'll do with that. But
she's
like
60-foot-tall 10-year-old girl, which sounds cute. It sounds like this guy's gonna befriend this like 10-year-old giant girl and be like, hey, let's go like. And this sounds, oh my god, I just have like, this movie's gonna be, this could be great, anyway.
Everyone listening has missed this, but you should have just seen the like beautiful bright wash that just came over Lee's face, and she was like, wait a second, this would be brilliant.
This could be great, I hope Disney pulls it off, because I'm excited.
I think they could, I think they really could. But yeah, so it's interesting that you bring up the animated story thing, I think, just because like, it almost was. So, you know, hey, there are other people thinking that too. So one of the biggest things that I found really interesting about this movie was this sort of concept that they kind of dance around where whenever Fallon first kidnaps Isabel, he refers to the king, who they call Eric the Great, as Eric the Terrible. as if to imply that there is like this entire other side of the story where, like, whereas on in Albion, they think that this was a really great war hero who took command and sent the giants away. Presumably these giants like have a different version of this tale where, like, maybe they were, you know, they were minding their own business and they were ambushed by a bunch of monks who showed up and were like, hey, are you God? Where's that God guy at? Is he up here? And so, like, I kind of like, and maybe like the, you know, they tried to sort of like be polite with them and then things just went south horribly. And so, like, it's sort of interesting to me that, like, there are two stories at play here, but Jack the Giant Slayer is not really interested in any sort of subtleties with that at all. So, like, I think it would be really sort of cool to go into that a little more. And maybe, like Lee said, that, like, diplomacy, like, does fail. Like, it's not something, like, you know, at the end of the day, they probably can't, like, talk out their differences. And maybe, like, Fallon has ascended to the ranks because he's, like, a murderous sort of general. And he, like, really is just, like, so bitter about everything that happened that he would, like, never agree to anything anyway. But, like, I think it would be really cool to play that up a little more. Also, I sort of liked the religious aspects of it, so I think it would be kind of neat to have maybe, like, they show monks, like, praying in front of the beanstalk, like, later on, but yeah. I think it would be kind of cool if, like, maybe the monks, like, saw this as a problem they created and they were trying to, like, mop it up, so, like, maybe Elmont is a monk or something instead of, like, one of the Kingsguard. Like, maybe he's, like, he's part of, like, this order, and then when this happens, he's like, this is, like, I've got to get up there, this is my job, and so, like, I've got to help you guys do this. So, also, he should have more to do with the princess and the being, like, they should, I think we should see, like, Elmont and the princess as being friends, sort of. Like, maybe he's, like, the one in the castle who she's closest to. You know, he's a younger guy in a castle full of, like, old Tucci's. So, you know, they probably have, like, a pretty good relationship, and I would like to have seen some of that, because I think it sort of plays up the three protagonists a little more if they had had more to do in the beginning. And also, I liked what you had said about the possibility of them both going up, about Jack and Isabel going up the Meanstalk together, and maybe they get split up then at some point. But if you do that, then you can have Elmont on the ground fighting his way up, and you don't need to have Jack there with him because you've established Elmont as a bigger presence. So the problem sort of with Tucci, like I kind of touched on before, is that, so what I kind of think would be interesting is if maybe Tucci has a little lackey in this movie whom I hate that we didn't really talk about, but I think it'd be kind of interesting if maybe for most of the movie the suspicion is on the lackey. You think the lackey is the villain and Tucci's just sort of like unknowing, and then like midway through the movie whenever he shows up wearing the crown, takes control of the giants, and, like, you know, you see him, and initially, like, in the movie, Elmont and Isabel are like, yes, like, he's here, and he's got the crown, he's controlling the dragons. Like, they are, like, smiling, like, this is great. Yeah. And then he's like, shut up, everyone, I'm in control now. And it's like, that would kind of be, like, a neat moment for them to be like, oh, no, I'm actually the villain here this whole time. Like, this was me. So I would also want to have him survive a little bit longer. I think without the giant politics, you could keep him there without having fun being this weirdo who wants something, question mark. I like your less giants thing, too. Yeah. If there were only, like, a few.
By the way, I think that's universal. We all want less
giants.
Yes. Yeah. No, we as Americans want less giants.
Make America full of giant less giants.
Giant free. Yeah. I like the idea of, like, them having some sort of, like, these, like, huge forces of nature. And like we had said before, there should be no epilogue at all.
No.
It ends with the kids in the bed telling the story.
That's all you need.
Yeah, that's a sweet ending.
There's no need for this. It's in a safe place, which means we dipped in gold.
Yeah.
And then bejeweled it. And then added some weird cross section to it. I don't understand how that's safe. So we hide it in. We don't know where they hide it because
we put crowns. Yo, I heard you like crowns. So we put crowns
on your crown. And then we just kind of don't see that it's stored anywhere. We just see that it get more and more
ornate,
good looking. Yeah. Thank you. And then it bam, it's crown jewels, BT dubs, and it's just like
it's nuts.
There's like a similar thing with Lone Ranger at the end of this movie, where you assume that like with almost any enormous budget studio movie that comes out today, you assume they're doing it with the intent of making a franchise at some point.
Yeah.
But you end this movie like hundreds of years in the future with everyone dead, and then like this reincarnated version of the Tooch. So like, is that what your sequel is? Does your sequel follow around baby Tooch as he tries to steal this crown? Why would you have this? If it had ended with I kind of like how like at the end they like do this voiceovers of other people telling the story, and like other people are like, oh no, I heard he brought a cow to the market, like, oh no, I heard it was his mom and not his uncle,
right?
Like a weird
and I kind of like the idea that like this could all be happening now, and it could just be like people throughout the kingdom are like, you know, like, oh no, I heard that like Jack the Giant Slayer, like he had a cow to sell and he did this and there was a magic heart. And like I think you could still end it there and that's fine, but it's just when you jump to the future it gets bonkers.
And it would be a good bookend if you did that, because you start the story. You start the movie telling the story.
Yeah,
and then you go to the end, and we've got the kind of revamped sort of.
Oh, also for the people listening at home, for those of you who are playing my favorite Bryan Singer game, Bryan Singer's Casting Couch, you can always find in any Bryan Singer movie a young Twinkie type kid who got this role because he was on Bryan Singer's Casting Couch. In this case, in this movie, it is one of the general's associates, the only other guy under the age of 30 aside from Nicholas Holt in this movie.
And he stands out like a sore thumb.
So whenever you're doing your drinking game, drink heavily when you see this kid. Recommendation? Do we recommend?
I do. I do.
I do recommend it. If you're looking for, you know, I want something that I can have some popcorn or have dinner to watch, and you're just looking kind of for like a
I would show
that,
this.
Know.
I think yeah. this
if
is
If you
a
like
good
Ewan
start.
McGregor at all
oh,
or Stanley 100%. Tucci at all,
yeah.
just like you go in for this.
Please.
As I don't know if this is a movie where I would be like, you guys, we need to watch it.
I don't know if you need to watch it. Like, I don't
no,
think it's essential.
I'm not
going
to rush out and be like, oh my God, you need to watch this. But if you're like, you know, if somebody think, hands
yeah.
it to you and says, hey, I think you should watch this, I don't think you should, you know,
yeah,
run
right.
away
throw out the window.
Yeah, throw out the window. Or you, I definitely recommend it. If you have any kind of mild interest in all, I definitely say go for it.
Include it in any future Ewan McGregor watchathons.
Yes.
I think it's a fun adaptation of the fairy tale, honestly.
With the island.
Yeah, with the island.
With the island.
It does a lot of things right, I think,
Solid
which I
McGregor.
Appreciate.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I would recommend it. Not perfect, but I think it's
yeah.
it's a pretty fun movie.
It's a diversion.
It's clever
yeah.
in places.
Yeah,
I think it brings up some cool ideas. That
it's
are
always
refreshing.
Nice to see a movie with like a nice female character that does
yes.
shit.
Yeah,
it's the
nice.
I would say it's the least troubled of the movies we've watched so far.
Yeah, I definitely yeah. agreed. Yeah, the usual stuff, right?
Yeah, Facebook. As always.
Yeah, follow us on some shit.
Yeah, some shit. Facebook.com/whywatchpodcast. Twitter is @whywatchpodcast. We're working on a website. As
yeah,
we just
the website is coming, guys.
It's
so we're
it's exciting.
We're trying out some stuff, but yeah. So follow us on there. Check us out. Do whatever it is that you want to do with us.
Keep listening, because if you stop, we'll know.
We do actually, like, the RSS feed actually feeds us.
Yeah.
Life Force.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like Batman Forever when Jim Carrey's getting the TVs beamed into his head.
Yes.
We're just sitting here on our couch as like RSSDs like fly to our brains.
Just like light shining
yes.
out of our eyes. It's great.
Or like the Hexus from
yeah, smoke.
Yeah, we're like inhaling.
We're tiny little slug oh, things at first, like RSSD.
Song on USB cables.
Yes. We sing a terrible, terrible song. Toxic Love. Meg,
yeah.
thank you for being part
thank
of this.
Thank you, Meg.
So much,
yeah.
Thank you very much
thank
for having me.
Thank you for
me.
Making the plane trip. I understand you have to catch your flight right
yeah.
now.
Yes, I'm actually headed to the airport. I'm no yes. longer in the same room. I'm
oh.
talking via cell phone on my way to
oh my
sounds
God.
Terrific.
Wow.
I know. Great reception, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, hold on. I'm going through a tunnel.
Oh.
Oh, we lost
you
her.
Lost her.
Lost call.
All right.
Do you want to buy us out?
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello? Bye.
Damn it.